Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. How you doing? If you are doing dry January, you're getting there, and you're nearly done. So, of course, I'm going to say carry on. You know that. And if you want to tell someone you're doing it and you've decided to stay, you know, stay stopped, which I really hope you will, then you can always drop me a message. I'm kind of pleased with myself, actually, because one of my lovely sober coaches sent me a link to this great video made by the Motivation Hub that includes my TEDx talk. And it's such a good video. And I'm up there with the greats. There's Jordan Peterson on there and Huberman and Rich Roll. Oh, God, how much have I wanted to get Rich Roll on my podcast forever? And Daniel Radcliffe, I think, is on there. It's a really great video. It's called Quit Drinking Alcohol. And there's my TEDx talk, kind of bits of my TEDx talk, Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew? Have been woven through this fabulous video. Now, sadly, they haven't credited me. I mean, you know, trying to not be too hurt about that. But, you know, as my sons have pointed out, I'm just not important like the others are. So nobody would know that it's me or my TEDx talk. So if you go to the show notes on this podcast, or if you go to thesoberclub.com, I've put the link to the YouTube video. And if you wanted to share the YouTube video, because it is fabulous and it would just be amazing to get it spread around even more people, then would you please, please do me a really big favour and add on my tag. So at Genuinely Grace, add my tag and add the name of my TEDx talk, Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew? I'd so appreciate that. Thank you. We can help get the message even further, even though, you know, those guys are much more famous than me. They still use my voice through it, right? So, yeah, so that's my little plea. I'd really appreciate that. If you would find that video, as I say, go to thesoberclub.com and you'll see it pop up on the top there. Or look at the show notes for this podcast and you'll see all the relevant links. Anyways, we had the most fantastic family constellation session last week. It really is so mind-blowing. We'll do another one in March. So let me know if that's of interest for you. We've got Sober by the Sea coming up if you want to connect with other like-minded people if you are in the Southeast. That's on February the 18th. And the weekend before that, a self-care and sobriety retreat at Champneys in Hertfordshire. So again, have a look at the Sober Club if that's of interest. Connection is, it really is just so important. I was hearing somebody the other day who just shared some of the basics. We all know this stuff, don't we? But just the real basics that we sometimes forget are the things that we have to put in place. So whether we're stopping drinking or whatever we want to do with our lives, if we want that sense of well-being, it's, you know, it comes down to good nutrition, you know, nutrition that supports us, really good sleep, you know, not too much, not too little, but at the right times, not kind of all day, exercise, you know, some kind of movement. Some kind of connection is just so important, that kind of social connection. It really is important. So anyways, they're the kind of basics. We all know that, really, don't we? And of course, I would add in there starting to actually like yourself and that self-esteem piece. This week's guest. Now, this is a topic that we've talked about at length in the Sober Club and on various podcasts when I've interviewed nutritionists. Of course, we chatted at the Happy Pair last week and Dominic Ludwig. It's been a bit of a nutrition month. But I've been wanting to get Mike Collins on for a while because he's known as the sugar guy, or the quit sugar guy, should we say. And, you know, his line, his kind of take on this, well, it's hard hitting. I got to tell you, it's hard hitting. And, I'm looking forward to bringing in this interview, see what you think. I'm going to caveat this interview by just saying, you know, my website, obviously I have thesoberclub.com, but I also run a website called imperfectlynatural.com. And I do believe personally that we can't get everything right. Now, that held me back for a long time because, of course, I thought that what that meant was it was fine to have a couple of bottles of 7-on or at least a bottle most nights. And of course, it doesn't. But having said that, you know, I do think that I really want you to enjoy this podcast and I really want you to take the messages from it. But if you are in the early stages of ditching the booze and sugar is, you know, if you're reaching for the ice cream in the middle of the night or whatever, you know, well, try and wait for dinner time at least. But what I'm trying to say is in the early weeks, the most important thing is stopping drinking. That is the absolute bottom line, and you can deal with the other stuff afterwards. So I'm just going to caveat this interview, this recording, with that sentiment, because what you can't do, in my opinion, is two or three things at once. This is the most important thing you will ever do for your health and well-being. Quit booze. It's the most important piece in the health jigsaw puzzle. Trust me, I really, really know this, okay? And when you've nailed that piece from that place, oh wow, you can nail it all. You really can. You can go after it all. But do that hard bit first, okay? So I'm just that's just my little disclaimer, okay? But I think you're going to find this interesting. Michael also did a fantastic little exclusive Q&A for us in the Sober Club. But enjoy the interview. So sugar is something we talk about a lot. And I'm really delighted to be able to speak to Michael Collins. Michael believes that sugar addiction is very real, not to be taken lightly. And as a person in long-time recovery from substance use disorder for over 37 years, and after much research and experimentation, he quit sugar with the help of amazing mentors. There's a huge amount to talk about with you, Michael, the founder of both sugaraddiction.com and quitsugarsummit.com. You've got a couple of books as well and challenges. We'll talk about all of that. Just hello first. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really great to chat to you. And while we've got snow in some parts of the UK as we record this, you're in sunny California, right?
I am. Southern California.
Yeah, There's not a lot of fairness there. But anyway, take us right back, Michael, before we get into all the work that you're doing now, you know, in the book and the challenge and all of that. Can you share a little bit of your story and what went on for you back then?
Back then, huh? This actually goes back a couple generations, to be honest with you. It's an interesting story, one I've come to understand in hindsight a little bit. But my grandmother died when my mother was only 8 years old. And when she passed away, it's kind of a long story, but they had to move in with her sister, my grandfather's sister. And he had to work all the time, my grandfather. So they owned the country store across the way. And my mother would cross that street. And my grandfather made a deal with his cousin Jim that anytime my 8-year-old mother walked into that store, she could have any candy she wanted, just put it on his tab. Mm. Now, that was a wonderful gesture for a child who has lost her mom and was only 8 years old. But my mother literally passed away believing sugar was love. I mean, that's how I grew up. I mean, we had unfettered access to the sugar bowl. We would put sugar, I got that sugar bowl from the estate just because of the memories where literally I'd be scraping half an inch of sugar with the milk and Kool-Aid three cups of sugar instead of one. And bread and butter and sugar sandwiches. It was insane. And candy, you know, it was crazy. Anyway, that's how I grew up. And I ran into alcohol and drugs, alcohol mostly, 14 years old, something like that. And that party lasted till I was 28 and I got sober. Now, I can talk about that with no problem.
I'd just be interested in just a little bit about how you got sober. I mean, if you got sober by 28, that's quite impressive. Most of us take decades to do that.
Well, I thought that I was old at 28. I thought my life was over. But I had a pretty, how shall I say, I had a glorious drunken life. And ran the largest nightclubs in the state of Florida and had hundreds of employees. And, you know, and then that was in the 80s when the cocaine cowboys had hit and just before crack hit, because I think if I didn't get sober before crack and free, I used to do freebase, the Richard Pryor stuff. And and, you know, cocaine in the nightclubs and what have you. So it was actually quite a journey, but I got sober at 28, walked into my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and ended up having to go to Alcoholics Anonymous because at that time in Florida, there was about 3 meetings a week, and this is in Tampa Bay, so it's a pretty big area. By the time 18 months rolled around, there were 53 meetings a week. Mm. And so it was just exploding. So I had to start, even though I had quit drinking earlier, I went to AA and been going that kind of stuff for the last 30 some odd years, almost 38 near in a few days. But yeah, I mean, it was, but here's the thing. I went right back to sugar, Janie. Started using sugar.
It's that cross addiction thing, isn't it? It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, literally compulsively. I mean, they used to call me the Mountain Dew man. Like I would drink 16 ounce Mountain Dews, 8 of them a day.
Wow.
Right. And I would just keep going back to the store and deposit bottles, keep getting them filled up again, whatever. And pasta, pizza, candy, and I wasn't really eating any real food. Mm. And you know, the only thing I wanted when I got sober was not to have red nose like all my relatives, you know, and like have this red face, right? Mm. And that was worse with the sugar than it was with the alcohol. Acne, rosacea, the whole thing. And so I started to try and think about getting healthy. And I'm an athletic guy, and I'd gained a bunch of weight. And so I started trying to get healthy. I read a book called Sugar Blues. And Sugar Blues was written in the late 70s and early 80s by a guy named William Duffy. And Duffy eventually married Gloria Swanson, the famous movie star.
Oh, wow.
And they promoted that book and all in the 80s and stuff. And I read it. And I ended up marrying a woman in recovery. And somehow I talked her into having children. It ended up being twins. No flour, no sugar, no caffeine in the womb. And that lasted till they were 6 years old.
Wow.
And I still remember it like it was yesterday. They were at a roller skating rink, another birthday party, the cake and ice cream came out, and both of them craned their head up, looking, trying to see, Dad, can we finally have some cake and ice cream? And we gave in that day, but through their whole childhood, they really only had sugar at the outside birthday party, never at home. And that experiment worked. It's a long story, but you know, I genuinely believe that first 1,000 days, now the science has proven this, the first 1,000 days of brain development is so important.
Yeah.
And I'm a smart enough guy, but my children are card carrying, you know, perfect scores on their college entrance exams, card carrying geniuses. Mm-hmm. And I just really believe I'm not that smart, and neither was their mother, you know? So it was really you know, the kids always said I should write a book about sugar because obviously their child was a little bit different.
Yeah.
We fought against the Montessori school and the relatives, the grandparents, the friends' parents. Everybody thought we were like depriving them.
Yeah, I can imagine. Absolutely. I can imagine. I mean, I've got friends who've sort of tried to do this, but they say, well, the minute grandma comes over to take them out or something, the game's up.
I just couldn't. My father and my mother would just give them, you know, whatever. So I had to be there, and I had to, you know, anyway.
So obviously by then, can I just chip in? Obviously by then, you'd stopped having any sugar, had you?
Oh, yeah. I haven't had sugar myself in 32 or 3 years. Yeah.
Wow.
No flour, no sugar, no caffeine, because it was treating me like the regular stuff. I mean, that back then, Mountain Dew, there was no energy drink. So Mountain Dew was the highest caffeinated beverage on the market. Mm. And I was just literally obsessed with it, both for the sugar and the caffeine. Mm. And so, like I said, the kids have said I should write a book, and I did in 2018. It went to an Amazon bestseller, The Last Resort Sugar Detox. We've actually brought it to our website. But before then, in 2010 or 9 or something, I bought sugaraddiction.com, and I started giving out the best information on the planet that was available at the time. And I was still working. It was, you know, it was still part-time, but it just never took off until about 4 or 5 years ago when we started coaching and meeting online and stuff. And then the pandemic just knocked it into like hyperspace, because we have, you know, 2 and 3 meetings a day where people can gather. And at the end of the day, it really takes the arc of a podcast to explain this, but the science, you mentioned the Quit Sugar Summit. We have that. It's coming up in January on the 16th. Every year in January. And I've talked to over 500 scientists, and what they've, you know, what we've learned over the time period is that, you know, the science is just exploding about the brain science around sugar, caffeine, whatever, is the same. And it's really, every day I do this, I believe more and more that sugar addiction is a substance use disorder requiring the exact same sobriety recovery process that we use to get clean from drugs and alcohol. And if you could just spend 5 minutes in my inbox, 5 minutes in my instant messenger, 20%, Janie, of my coaching clients, when they call to talk with me, are crying. It's really kind of crazy, the pain out there of people who, and the fastest growing segment of our groups are people already 5, 10, 15 years sober and can't put down the sugar.
That's interesting.
It's amazing. So
it's really interesting.
That's the short version of my how I ended up here, but usually brings up more questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I've got lots of questions, but I suppose you know, just for anyone who is sort of relatively new to the concept, you know, just tell us the damage that sugar does, and I mean, when did it become quite so prevalent? And I know you mentioned, you know, your the family situation, and even sort of back in the day, it's what people did. But I'm not quite sure. I mean, until the kind of the whole marketing thing kicked in, that for me felt like a big change. Because, you know, when I was a kid, though, I mean, there was sugar about, don't get me wrong, and I'm guessing when my mum was young, there was too. But I don't think it was quite the same as it is now, in terms of literally it's in everything. It's not only the sweets that your mum would have been given at the corner shop. You know, it's in everything. It's in every sauce, for God's sake. It's in everything, isn't it? It's because it's cheap.
Yes. Well, the answer really lies right when I was getting sober, and then right after that, getting off sugar, before it really ascended, is the high fructose corn syrup. When the high fructose corn syrup came into the diet, there was a change in the way that crops were subsidized in the United States, and they subsidized corn, and they turned it into high fructose corn syrup, and it just got in everything. And then they accelerated the sugar as well. So you can see the obesity numbers climbing parallel to one another since the 1980s till now.
Yeah.
It just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. And you're right, everything now, 85% of all the products, boxes, bags, and cans, and takeouts in restaurants contain sugar in them.
Wow.
And this is because it works. It brings people back. We get the children addicted very young. The cartoons and the sugar cereals and all that kind of stuff. And it's really kind of sad, to be honest with you, because the science didn't really catch up until the last 5 years, when it's really exploded. Now, there was a lot of science. It's a long story, but the short version is there was an English guy named John Yudkin from the UK who argued vehemently that sugar was causing all of these diseases, heart disease and obesity and everything. But there was a guy in the United States named Ansel Keys, and Keys argued that it was the fat. Right.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was ridiculous because it's not the fat. And the fat was taken out of everything in
That's
the food.
Right. Yeah.
Grocery
low,
store.
Low fat, low sugar. What a disaster.
Right. And but no, they added sugar because when you take the fat out, it tastes like terrible.
Well, so yeah, unless they added the artificial sweetness. That was the other thing that went on, of course, as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they all exploded as well. Yeah. And those are basically a chemical experiment.
Absolutely.
Nobody knows what's happening to our body there.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. Fascinating.
You can. I love the history of it, the anthropology of the evolution, because I know we can't get out of this mess till we figure out how we got in it.
Yeah.
And in reverse field, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That is interesting. I mean, you know, you mentioned your journey with your kids and I'm so impressed. I mean, I think I tried with my first one and I managed it till I had my second one. And then it just, you know, you sort of, you lose track of stuff, but there's so much pressure and almost also there's so much conditioning with all of us really in with this idea that sugar is some kind of a reward, you know, right. Or some kind of comfort, isn't there? So, you know, the child falls over, oh dear, how awful for you, have a sweet, you know, oh, you're feeling upset, never mind, have a biscuit. It's ingrained in us the way we've been conditioned to drink alcohol. It's so ingrained, it's absolutely exhausting. I mean, with the recent developments that you're saying with science, is any of that going to filter through, do you think, to regular individuals?
No, it's such a great question. You know, we continue to bang the drum. I mean, it really is an awareness building thing at this point, because now the science is there. There's actually a UK dentist with a thing called the Rewards Project.
Okay.
Galuli James, I think. I've interviewed him a couple times, and he's really interesting as far as trying to change the reward system that you talk about. Because you're so right that, you know, we reward kids in schools and at home for doing whatever with sweet treats when it's just not necessary. You know, my mentor, who I've interviewed a lot, I got him again tomorrow for our January event. He thinks you need to be 18 years old and have an ID to get sugar. I think it should be an adult thing, right? Mm. And that's because he's been studying the science for 40 years, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So. It's interesting. And you know, as you say, it's so ingrained in the marketing as well. So, you know, in schools, you would have a sports day, for example, in the UK, and the prizes would be chocolate bars. And right. Then that's played out again at the Olympics and stuff, isn't it? Where you know, you've got sponsorship by Coca-Cola or, whatever chocolate company. So it's so invasive. It's everywhere. Just in case anyone is under any illusions that, you know, that you haven't done your homework here. What's wrong with sugar? Just in case anyone hasn't kind of got to that point yet. In a nutshell.
Well, you know, I mean, it literally destroys, on the cellular level, the mitochondria, you know, destroying your energy. And, as far as the diseases, there's literally over 100 that have been chronicled, from heart disease to diabetes to obviously weight gain and obesity. They're calling Alzheimer's diabetes 3 because people who get diabetes 2 have such a higher rate of Alzheimer's. And it's really metabolic syndrome of the brain, if you will. Mm. Your brain actually shrinks, right? And so this kind of, my mother died of Alzheimer's. And in my world, after understanding and being there, and she would not eat real food when there was no filter. She died of sugar addiction. Wow. Genuinely. She had all of these maladies, from heart disease to cancers and, you know, everything. I mean, including Alzheimer's. And I just watched it up close and personal. And she just wasn't able to ingest real food at the end because she wasn't thinking clearly. She just was addicted to the sugar.
Yeah.
And so I see it over and over and over again in my work and daily, where people have tried everything. And this is people in recovery, out of recovery, doesn't matter who you are. You know, they just seem to not be able to stop. Now, biologically, and I was the president of the Food Addiction Institute for a couple of years and worked with all the MDs and PhDs there. And what happened was, about a third of the data now says about a third of people biochemically, just like an alcoholic, cannot ingest sugar without setting up cravings for more, 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 right? Mm. It's just like you can't stop drinking when you start drinking.
Yeah.
And about a third of people are what we call harmful users. And because of what we've been talking about, where 85% of everything they eat, if they're not thinking about it, contains sugar, they've gained weight. And, you know, with a reset, they can enjoy sugar once or twice a year or once or twice a month or whatever, after they understand what constant repetitive sugar is doing to their health and their weight and everything. And then about a third of people are normal, normies, we all hate them, that they can have a half a cookie, half a biscuit, and just no problem, leave it alone, like someone that can have half a glass of wine who's not an alcoholic. So it breaks down, and if you look at it, it tracks perfectly with the obesity numbers, right? A third of people are obese, a third of people are overweight, and a third of people are normal size. Now, that said, you do not have to be overweight or obese to be a sugar addict.
No, absolutely.
I've got a bunch of, I got one Olympic athlete, a bunch of marathoners, ultra marathoners who are my coaches. Like, you can be a stone cold sugar addict. Can you imagine an ultra marathoner? I just did a testimonial thing yesterday. Ultra marathoner, that's 100+ miles, okay? And still quits sugar and loses 35 pounds. I mean, it's she's running and still the weight stays on, right? Because they would celebrate with sugar. They would carb load with this thing called goo, which is just basically a plastic container while they're running, that they push basically sugar and fructose into their body. Mm. And then her performance times go down too. So it runs the gamut, just like alcoholism and drugs. It runs the gamut of who gets addicted and who doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the big question then is, you know, where would someone start then? You know, if they know that this is going on for them, you know, if they know that that their life could be better without the sugar, just as I always say, you know, if you know your life could be better without the booze, then that's a gift, because you can then do something about it. Right. But if you know that your life could be better without the sugar, where do we start?
No, it's a great question. And I have a unique answer, and you know, obviously you can join our 30-day challenge and you can do all this kind of stuff. We have programs that require, you know, you require to get a little information, but more than that, they have, you know, group meetings. We have 2 meetings, going to be 3 meetings a day.
So the connection is really important, just like with alcohol.
Everything. Mm. It's everything. Because Dr. Google will tell you everything you need to know. But so many people come to me, Janie, they're so educated about nutrition and macros and diets and this diet and that diet, vegetarian, keto, carnivore, doesn't even matter, but they still can't put down the sugar. Hmm. You know what I mean? And the sugar revolves around what I was going to say is the kind of weird answer that I have to that question is that if you want to get off sugar, study fructose.
Yeah.
For your folks who know the difference, a table sugar molecule is half glucose and half fructose. And we know what the glucose molecule has been doing to our bodies, diabetes 2, obesity, all this other stuff. What is less known is what the fructose is doing to our bodies, which is acting on the nucleus accumbens, the brain's reward chemicals, the frontal lobe, where they are literally drawing their blood back to our lizard brain, our base brain, because we're craving this dopamine hit, serotonin, norepinephrine, GABA, right? The science, the brain science is very clear on this, you know what I mean? And plus, fructose can only be processed in the liver. It doesn't burn off like regular stuff. And fructose causes fatty liver. Now, this is an alcoholic disease.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And like children, we have an epidemic of 5-year-olds with fatty liver disease. Okay. Yeah. They do not drink alcohol.
It's terrifying.
They drink sugar. And it's just really, again, like you said, it takes about the arc of a podcast, about 45 minutes to get people to understand all of the science that has taken me almost 10 years to accumulate in interviewing 500 scientists, most of whom are just toiling in anonymity in their research labs. Mm. They've never had any exposure, right? And if they did get exposure, the sugar lobbies knock it all down.
Oh, absolutely.
And dispute it all, right? Mm. With their own quote-unquote nonprofits, which they fund, and they had their own research, which is total BS, you probably realize.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a, it's, look, it's like drinking and driving, smoking in public places, seat belts in cars. When the science finally says, this doesn't work for society anymore, this doesn't work for individuals anymore, it's time to change. But you know how long it took to get cigarettes to change, to go from 45, 46% of the population to below 14? How long it took to get seatbelts enacted? How long it took to get condoms in bathrooms? You know what I mean? It's like, people didn't out people in San Francisco because they wanted to be mean. They wanted to get healthcare for AIDS, right? It's so, and it takes, again, some time for society to make this adjustment. One of the main adjustments that was made that literally flew under the radar, no one even knew about it, was the pyramid, the Food and Drug Administration in the United States, the pyramid of what we're supposed to eat, it comes up for review every 3 or 4 years, right? Well, it came up for review and didn't change a bit, which is ridiculous because it has a lot of grains and cereals at the bottom, right? But one thing they did say is that children under 5 should have zero added sugar. Right. Zero. Not like a little, not zero, which was wonderful. You know what I mean? So it's starting, but it's slow.
That's interesting. Now, you see, in the UK, I don't know if it's the same in the States, but in the UK, we have this thing that came in a couple of years ago called the sugar tax. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And the idea of that, if I've got my story straight, is that manufacturers were going to be have to pay extra if they had a whole load of sugar in their products, in their, you know, let's say fizzy drinks or whatever. And so the thinking was, okay, so this is going to be beneficial because it means that they'll put less sugar in. So that could be good. However, in my personal opinion, it's completely backfired because what they've done is they've added artificial sweeteners alongside the sugar. Yeah. So you've now got a right old chemical concoction.
Yes.
Where you buy something that you think is, you know, if you're going to buy a lemonade or whatever, you know, in the old days, you'd be able to say, okay, you know, I'll have a lemonade or I'll get the kids a lemonade, but don't get the diet one because you definitely don't want that nonsense. But now you would go and buy a regular one and it has both sugar and aspartame or whatever the hell else in there. So 100%. It's done nothing at all. And meanwhile, there's still, you know, God knows how many teaspoons of sugar in a jar of pasta sauce or whatever. So it's a mess. It really is a mess. And you know, you talk about your food pyramid or whatever. In the UK, we have, I think the government still call it the Eat Well plate or some such. I mean, right. Oh my God. I mean, let's rename that right now. The Eat Really Badly plate, because, you know, the proportion of, I mean, what are they even thinking of? Seriously.
I don't know what they're thinking. I'm listening to the science.
But you're quite right. We need more. We need, you know, good fats in our diet for starters. The demonization of fat over the years is very much connected with this, isn't it?
100%. I mean, it may be the whole ball of wax. That was an evolutionary wrong turn. I think people always ask me, are you a doctor, Collins? And I'm like, no, but if I was, I would be an anthropologist who studied how we evolved to get here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and the grains coming in and the flours and the sugars coming in. And, you know, literally they would load up the boats in England. They would go to the west of Africa. They would go to the Caribbean, the United States, load up with sugar, rum, and molasses and come back. And, you know, grew an empire, a giant empire on the backs of slavery and sugar.
Yeah.
And that's the first real glimpse where people went from like 5 pounds of sugar to like 100 pounds of sugar. And it took less than 100 years, which is just an eyelash blink in evolutionary history.
Yeah.
Our body has run into this product. And look, I don't have anything against the sugar producers or big food and everything. They didn't know the science either. when they began to learn the science, yes, they obfuscated it a little bit. They kind of tried to make it like they tried to lessen the blow. But at the end of the day, they were just trying to grow their companies, you know what I mean, and serve people what they wanted, which the addiction model is very easy to grow a Starbucks because you're growing it on sugar and caffeine.
Yeah.
You know, people want this addictive process. And now, literally in the last 3 to 5 years, we understand that that product, sugar, caffeine, these, and flour even, is acting on the same brain reward chemicals that alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
And it's like the idea that sugar gets not enough respect to be a drug of abuse the way it is today. Just talk to any recovering food addict, any real food addict who got recovery. They don't talk about their weight loss. They talk about being able to feel again, that their brain came back online, that they can focus better, that they can remember things better, right?
Yeah.
It's a personal development process that once you eliminate the nasty substances, you know, you feel better and you're healthier, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And how hard is it then? How, you know, with people that you've worked with, I know it's a how long is a piece of string question. You can't answer it for everyone. But typically, you know, how long is the process at the beginning? Because I think what frightens people is they think they're going to be feeling terrible for absolutely ages.
Right. Well, you're spot on in that there is a period of time, especially if you do flour, sugar, and caffeine all at the same time, day 3 or 4 or 5, you're going to be incapacitated. You're not going to be able to work, think, move. You're going to be in pain, your headaches, you're starving, you're irritable. You're going to want to sleep 15 hours a day. It's tough. It's a hard detox. But that, depending on your habit, it will pass. Yeah. And you know, depending on how, you know, everybody's a little different, but between 10 and 30 days, the sun will come back out. You'll feel a little bit better physically. You won't have the cravings as bad because it really is a chicken and the egg. If you have sugar in your system and had it recently, you have more cravings.
Makes you crave more. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so once that passes, then the mental game starts. This is where, you know, the literature, 95%, this is documented left and right. The Biggest Loser, they did a study, 95% of anyone who loses any amount of weight gains it all back in the first year and adds some.
Yeah.
And the reason they do that is because anybody can restrict flour and sugar for a period of time, be it a month or 6 months. But when life stress hits, when the real reason they used it, you have to remember this. This is the crux of my work and the crux of the answer to what everybody's seeking. In the world of alcohol and drugs, and you know this as good as I do, if you started using alcohol and drugs when you were 14 or 15, you stopped growing emotionally.
Yeah, absolutely. So
well-known construct in treatment centers and in the rooms that you need to basically grow up. Your life's a mess. Relationships, finances, career, everything's a mess, okay? And you need to stop solving problems with alcohol and drugs. Hmm. Well, think about it. Like, let's go back to that proverbial recovering food addict. When you talk to them, they had to go back probably to the womb, but definitely to childhood, where they never, just unconsciously, because it's in the food system and a child can score it freely. Yes, a decidedly drug term, but you can score sugar. People actually believe that the life that they are living, the emotional life that they are living, is the norm of life. When in reality, when they had an issue, they would ingest sugar. They would just, when they were bullied, when they were lonely, when they were scared, they would just get a soda, they get a candy bar to go with it, and the feeling went away for a time.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
And so they went an entire lifetime. Now they're 30, 40, 50, 60 years old. They've gained a pound or two since high school. And the process stops working. Doesn't matter how much they ingest, they're still feeling the hurt, the worry, the anxiety, the fear, just like drugs and alcohol.
Again,
every day I do this, I know that sugar is powerful enough to do it. And the byproduct, the only reason people want to quit is the byproducts of bad health. Mm. Otherwise, they would want to continue just like drinking, the consequences, you know?
I just want to pick up on something you said, you know, sort of describing the, you know, the initial stages where, you know, you don't feel good, obviously. But how much of sugar addiction, to use that phrase, mm-hmm. is physical and how much is emotional? Because there's no doubt it's both, right? You know, sometimes we feel we crave, in inverted commas, sugar physically, and other times we might have just eaten a load of sugar, but it's that we're looking for that sweetness in our life. It's a purely emotional thing.
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. I've never had it phrased that way, nor have I ever thought about the ratio breakdown, okay, of the biochemically, like I said, about a third of people cannot ingest this product without creating the cravings, right?
Right.
And the other third of what we call harmful users, they're accustomed to it. Mm. They're just accustomed to it. But that said, I believe personally, just like drugs and alcohol recovery and famous books and educators, Gabor Mate, The Body Keeps the Score, even Oprah's new book, What Happened to You, with Dr. Bruce Perry, is that because we use this product to manage our emotional life, our childhood, when we let it go, we have to reconfigure our emotional life. Yeah. We have to literally understand that we need new ways, yoga, walking, call a friend, get a hug, mani-pedi, massage. There's a million ways to self-soothe.
Yeah.
And ones that do not, we call the difference, Janie, we call it is effort-based dopamine versus substance-based dopamine. And when I say dopamine, I mean the entire constellation, because people understand dopamine these days.
Yeah.
Serotonin, norepinephrine, GABA, adrenal glands, your cannabinoid receptors, all of these things, and the big one, oxytocin, the bonding chemical, all are affected by sugar, okay? Yeah. All of them, in one way or the other. Yeah. We don't know definitively, but we do know from recovering food addicts who've, you know, gone from 300 pounds to 120, people who have changed their entire life, it had nothing, and this is the biggest takeaway of this podcast, it has zero to do with the food and the sugar. Nothing to do with the food. If you want recovery, you have to look at your emotional life and how you use sugar to manage that. And it's because the spectrum of the like on a spectrum thought process of where you are depends on how much, consciously or unconsciously, you use this product to manage your emotions over time since you were a child.
Yeah.
Because the physical part of it is pretty much, I think, I like to have people think nicotine, not heroin or alcohol. It's not that hard, but if you don't make the connection through a podcast or this arc that it's really the emotions, then you're bound to fail. And people will fail with me all the time because they want to know a diet plan. They want to know what can I eat and what is my exercise.
Yeah, and how much willpower can I use? Yeah.
How much willpower? Because it doesn't have anything to do with that.
Exactly. Nothing. Yeah, so. I love that's a great answer. Thank you. Well, I could talk to you forever, obviously. let me just ask you one last question, I think probably people would be interested to know. So for someone like you who doesn't ingest sugar, you don't have any sugar in your life, would you have fruit sugars as in pieces of fruit?
Pandora's box just got opened. Okay. So I get a lot of pushback on this, Janie. I really do. So in the beginning, I would suggest fructose is fructose. Like they say, a drug is a drug is a drug. Mm-hmm. Alcohol is alcohol. Fructose is fructose. The molecule does not change from bananas to table sugar. The fructose is fructose. And the offending molecule, the one you want to study, as I mentioned earlier, if you want to get off sugar, is not glucose half the molecule, but the fructose half of the molecule. Mm-hmm. And fructose is a psychoactive drug in my world. Okay. Fructose is, and I can do this better, quicker, if you go to a YouTube video called Is Fruit Good For You? There's actually another one that came out that I want to start recommending by Dr. Gary Fetke from Australia, F-E-T-T-K-E. And the bottom line is that we were only supposed to get fructose once a year, when the berries were ripe.
Yeah, seasonally.
Those little nasty crab apples that are grow wild were ripe. The animals and our humans would come in, they would rip that tree to shreds, and 2 days later, it would only when they're at the peak of ripeness. They didn't eat it earlier. So only a week little window. That's how much fructose we were supposed to have, right? And now, when you're trying to get off of sugar, you can't even drink fruit juice or dried fruit. That's completely
out. Yeah, I get that.
But you can, I call a little handful of berries, strawberries or raspberries or blueberries, your methadone, your Suboxone.
Yeah.
This will get you through the withdrawals in the first month, right? Mm. But don't let it get habit. No bananas, no mangoes, no pineapples, all this really... Let's look at seedless grapes. Let's look at seedless oranges. Let's look at, these things cannot propagate in nature. They have to be a man-made sugar bomb, right?
Yeah.
And yes, you may be able to go back to some fruit later, only if it doesn't recreate the cravings for real. When I say high test, like grain or powdered sugar, right? Processed sugar. So yeah, it's a tough one because Dr. Fetke in the video says some marketing genius, it used to be the green grocer, right? And some marketing genius combined the two together, call it fruits and veg, right? When in reality, green stuff is so different. And even that has some fructose in it because it's been hybridized to get the bitterness out, right? But it's nowhere near these big fruit bombs that we've been creating over and this is another hybridization process that started 300 years ago and is at its apex right now of hybridization. I know it's a hard
you're gonna have to come back on the program because I'd love to talk more about that another time.
It's a hard one for people to accept.
It is brilliant. But just reminders, Michael, so the book is The Last Resort, A Resort Sugar Detox. You have your online 30-day challenge, Sugar Freedom, right? And Michael, I really appreciate it. It's fascinating. And thank you so much for the work that you do. And I really appreciate you taking this time to talk to us. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work. And one of the things I believe deep in my heart is that the sober community, the recovering community, holds the key to the obesity crisis and the metabolic syndrome crisis because we get addiction. Like we understand it. When someone comes to me that's not recovering, they don't understand what we've talked about here for this podcast. So keep up the good work.
Appreciate it. So we'll put the links in the show notes. Thank you, Michael. And just to reiterate again, if you're in the early weeks of ditching the booze, in the first few weeks, you need really good food. Yes, you might need some sugar. Just do your best to keep it as healthy as possible. If you're a member of the Sober Club, we have so many resources on alternatives to sugar, on different ways of taming the sugar monster. And as I said in that interview, sometimes it's about looking for, is it really that you're looking for the sweetness in your life? Is it actually that? So, yeah, I will leave those thoughts with you. Don't forget, again, Sober by the Sea coming up in February. It'd be lovely to see some of you there. Champneys Retreat, if that's a thing for you, if you'd like to do that. In March, we have another Family Constellations. Oh, I nearly forgot. My Sober Coach training is this weekend, and then the next one is in March. It's filling up fast. So if that's something that's of interest to you, if you've been sober for a while and you're thinking maybe you want to branch out, inspire others, then drop me a message. We'll have a conversation. I'm such a big believer that the right people show up for these things. They really do. If it's the right thing for you, then this is going to bring a little light bulb on in your mind, and hopefully you'll get in touch. If you're doing dry January, stick with it. Carry on. Stay dry till July. Your life will change. You will start to like yourself again. And just another reminder, look for that fabulous video, Quit Drinking Alcohol. It's Jordan Peterson. It's been made by the Motivation Hub. It's on YouTube, and you'll find the link at thesoberclub.com or in the show notes to this podcast. And as I said before, just to be really kind to me, I'd so appreciate it if you'd share it. But if you'd share it with tagging my name at Janie Lee Grace, and please put the title of my TEDx talk, Sobriety Rocks, Who Knew? You do me a really big favour. I really appreciate it. And if you're doing this, by the way, you know, if you're stopping drinking and you haven't told anyone, you know, that's okay. Tell me. Just tell me, drop me a message. I'll be your cheerleader. See you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.